Good morning, everyone. I'll be doing a short reading this morning from Matthew 6, 9 to 13, if you'd like to turn to that. This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one.
I wonder if you can take yourself back to when you're in primary school. Some of you aren't there yet, but that's okay. But take yourself back to that time. You know that time that you wrote that note and you said, will you be my friend? And on one side was the yes box and one side was the no box. And you gave it to that friend and they said yes. And then you started playing on the monkey bars together. Or maybe a little bit older. Maybe you're a teenager. And you asked that person out. Will you go? All those emotions that were running, those questions of what if they say no? What if they don't? And you ask them. And they say yes. What happens after yes? Well, you start going out. You might go to a movie, or might get a milkshake, or you might, you know, go to a party together. Maybe a little bit further on, and you become an adult, and you ask somebody to marry you. Significant moment in a person's life, where you actually get to the place that you have the confidence to ask the question, will you be my wife? Will you be my husband? And then what happens after yes? Well, generally speaking, you get married. Now, sometimes that might be quickly. Sometimes that might take a while. But you start to actually take action. Maybe you buy a house together. Maybe you move halfway around the world. You're not looking at anyone. But after yes, action takes place. Maybe a bit later on, you ask someone to go into business with you, that you can see an opportunity. And you go to that person and say, will you go into business with me? And what happens? They say yes. So you get an ABN, you make a business plan, you actually go get a premises, you get started. Something happens after yes. There's action after yes. Someone comes to you and says, will you take a trip with me? Will you travel around the world? Will you go and see this famous site? Will you do it? What happens after yes? You start saving, if you haven't already. You jump on the website that has all the flights and you book them through whatever your chosen airline is. You pack, you buy a suitcase, you get a passport. Some kind of action happens after yes. What happens after you say yes to following Jesus? What actually takes place when you get to that place and say, you know what, God, I don't quite know what this means or what this looks like for me, but yes. I want to follow you. Well, what did we say yes to? What is it that we actually said yes to? What does the Bible tell us that we said yes to? Two verses that I want to draw to just as a way of opening this series is in Mark chapter 1, verse 16 to 17, we find this. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake. For they were fishermen. Come and follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. Some of Jesus' first disciples, now they were fishermen, so Jesus contextualized it to them. But what was he saying? He was saying, come follow me, and I will show you how to go and do likewise. Come follow me, and I will send you out to call others to come and follow me. And that when you say, yes, Jesus, I will follow you, you're saying yes to drawing others to following him as well. Then in Luke chapter 9, verse 23 to 24, we find this. Then he said to them all, whoever wants to be my disciple, whoever, so open net, anybody can do this. Whoever wants to be my disciple, must deny themselves, take up their cross daily, and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life, they'll lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will save it. That when we get to that place where we decide to follow Jesus, we actually choose a life of denying ourselves. Maybe you're here today and you're exploring faith, or you're just thinking about what faith actually means for you. And I hope that this actually gives you a clear understanding of just what it means to follow Jesus. That Jesus, when he was talking to them and said, anyone can be my disciple, but whoever wants to be, this is what it looks like. Your life is no longer your own. That to save your life, if you try and save it yourself, or you try and get out there and do all that stuff yourself, you'll actually lose it. You won't succeed. You won't get there. But if you give your life to me, if you give your life for my purposes, if you wake up each day and say, God, how can I follow you today? How can I be your representative in my workplace? How can I be your representative in my family? How can I be your representative in my neighborhood? How can I live for you this day? If we would do that each day, deny ourselves for the greater good of God's purposes. That's the calling of a disciple of Jesus. Well, we're starting a new series today called Bless. And the whole premise of this series is looking at how do we engage the world around us? How do we get out of our shells? How do we get out of our little, you know, places of comfort and become a little bit uncomfortable and engage with the world beyond our front doors? And some of you are sitting going, oh, but I don't want to engage with the world beyond my front door. I like my front door. So do I. Got a really big front door. It's great for moving furniture. But there's some realities to this. That we said yes to following Jesus. We said yes to engaging the world around us. So I want to look at this question because I think it's really relevant to the world we live in today. How do we live an active faith in a complex world? And in case you hadn't noticed, the world is pretty complex. It's really hard to know what to say and what not to say, what to do and what not to do. And then to try and throw faith into the mix and try and know what am I allowed to say and do and where can I do it and say it and how does that all work? And I want to be like in this place, but I want to have friends in this place. And I'm just tired thinking about it. Is there a way to follow Jesus that can change the world? Because there was, because you go back to the time of Jesus, you go back to the first disciples, and they didn't live in a world which was pro-Christianity. They didn't live in a world that was pro actually doing these things. They lived in a world which actually quite anti what was going on. And yet there was a way that they could live that slowly over time turned everything on its head. So the series we're looking at is unashamedly borrowed. The principles from this are borrowed from a book called Bless. This was not my clever idea, so I want to be very upfront about that. It's a book by John and Dave Ferguson. It's backed with a whole lot of research and things that have been done because they started actually doing this in practice and then discovered this actually worked. So then they wanted to get some data to sort of demonstrate sort of what does it look like and how does it play out. So if you want to, I encourage you, this is available at Kurong. It's available on Amazon, either in Kindle form or you can buy the physical copy. You will get so much from this book. You can skip church for the next... No, that's not true. So I encourage you that you can jump on there. It is not a silver bullet. It's not a that's if you just do this, the whole world's going to change. But it's a really practical starting point. So the letters of Bless stand for this. The B stands for begin with prayer. The L in the book just stands for listen, but it talks a lot about listening without judgment, and that second bit is actually an essential aspect of why this works. E stands for eat. That's right, this book tells you to eat. It's magical. Together. Oh, okay, I suppose. Serve your community and share your story. And it is in an order. There is a deliberate order. They happened to find that it fits the word bless. I think they picked words that would fit that acronym in the order that it needed to be. But there is actually an order that makes a difference in helping someone be open to hearing you. That by the time you get to the place where you can share your story, they actually want you to share your story. because you've taken these steps before to really help create the atmosphere where this can take place. So over the next few weeks, we're going to take each of these letters and sort of dig into them, give some practical application. How does this work? What does this look like? All building towards our Engage Day, where we put into practice the serving your community aspect. And I hope you can find other ways to do that too. So why do we start with prayer? Like, it's almost the Christian thing to do. So we're going to start saying, all right, can someone pray? We've got to pray before we start. It's like, it's almost the cliche. It's like, all right, we'll do our token prayer. Heavenly Father. Why is prayer so essential at the start? Why has it become a cliche? Why is it actually an essential way of starting? Why is it the starting place? Well, one of the key reasons, I think, why we learn that prayer is the starting place is it is so regularly the starting place for Jesus. It's incredible when you read through the New Testament, you read through Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, with a lens of looking for where Jesus prays and the role that prayer plays in each of the things that he does, how often prayer precedes the next thing. So let's look at some of those. Firstly, in Mark 1, verse 35, very early in the morning, I'm not up this time, very early in the morning while it was still dark, well, actually at the moment I might be because it's, you know, dark a bit earlier, but very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. How did Jesus start his day? Got up while it was dark, into a solitary place, and he prayed. Luke chapter 6, verse 12 to 13, this is just before he appoints the apostles. He's about to make a significant decision because these are the people that are going to be tasked with taking his entire ministry beyond his life. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray, and he spent the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them who he designated apostles. He spent a night in prayer and then he acted. In John chapter 6, verse 11, we find this. Jesus took the loaves, he gave thanks and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. Now, if you know this story, you know that following this, basketfuls of food was picked up. More than what was started with it, the miracle of the bread and the fish. How did it start? How did it happen? He gave thanks. He prayed. In Matthew 14, 23 to 24, right before he walks on water, you know that thing that we all do all the time, after he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. And so then Jesus walks out to them on the water. But what happened first? He prayed. In Luke 11, verse 1, one day, Jesus was praying in a certain place. When he finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray, just as John taught his disciples. And then he breaks out into the Bible reading that we had today. There was something about his prayer life that the disciples saw again and again and again and again. And then they saw what happened following his prayer. And they said to themselves, and they said to Jesus, we need that. We need to know how you do that. How do you pray? Teach us to pray. And it wasn't only Jesus that saw prayer as of first importance. Paul himself, as he's writing to Timothy, so his protege, and he's wanting to tell Timothy, how do you do the stuff that you need to do? What's the order? What's the practices? How is it that you should frame your ministry? And he writes this letter and he sends it off to Timothy. And in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1 to 4, it says this. I urge you then, first of all, or of first importance, as it says in some translations, that petitions, prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for all people. Then he breaks out in this little verse that I'll explain in a second. For kings and all those in authority, that we might live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness. This is good and pleases God our Saviour, who wants all people to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. Now, the little tidbit here that he goes on to talk about the kings and those in authority is, surely the Christians aren't going to pray for their leaders, like, but because their leaders are like terrible and they're like doing all kinds of things and they don't do Christian stuff. Surely we wouldn't. Of course they would. Because God wants us to pray for all people. And in case you didn't know it, because you might not think it, politicians are people. We might wonder that when you're in the middle of an election campaign and you're getting tired of all the stuff that goes on and wondering, is this actually what's going on? But no, he says, you are to pray for all people. Yes, pray for the Supreme. Pray for Caesar. Pray for the governors. Pray for those who are in leadership over you. And don't just pray that they would just, you know, do the things you want them to do. Pray for them. Pray positively about them. But pray for all people. And he's very clear, and this is throughout Paul's teachings. Prayer is not something that's flippantly done. It is of first importance. It is the starting block. You know when you're in a swimming race, and the worst place to fail is the starting block. If you don't, when people are training to be swimmers, they practice that jump again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Because if you fail that starting gun, you've lost the race. No matter how good you are, if you're too slow off that starting block, you won't catch up. Prayer is a little bit like that. It is of such significant importance. It's got to be where we start. So we live in a distracted world. I was at the movies the other day. I don't go to the actual cinema very often. And I was just, this for whatever reason, I was particularly aware this time. How many times I thought about checking my phone? I didn't. But I just thought about, I'm watching this movie. It's a captivating, engaging movie. And I constantly thought, oh, I wonder what's going on Facebook. I wonder what's happening. And that said something to me that I need to work on myself. But I'm sure you can think about places where you're distracted. And there's something about prayer which to some degree is an antidote to this. Annie Stanley says this: what gets our attention determines our direction and ultimately our destination. Or if you would prefer the short version, attention determines direction. Now, how does that fit into prayer? Where does that sort of fit? Well, when you're regularly praying for people by name, they are brought to your attention. When you have something in place that tells you, hey, I need to pray for my neighbor. Hey, I need to pray for my friend down the street. I need to pray for that person in my workplace. They come to your attention. I know what happens for me sometimes is I have a practice that I go through our church list of who calls the church home. Every now and then, it's not necessarily every week thing, but I've got a reminder that comes up and tells me. And then as I go through that, I go, oh, yeah, that person's got a job interview this week. I could send them a text. Or, oh, yeah, that person's going through some stuff. Maybe I should give them a call. And as I'm praying and as I'm doing that, it brings them to my attention. Because what gets our attention gets our action. It determines what we do. If I've got a friend that I haven't caught up with for a long time and I'm praying for them, when I pray for them, I'm reminded I really need to get coffee with them. Brings them to our attention. The other thing that prayer does, I think we underestimate this too, because sometimes we can think, look, if I pray, prayer's not going to do anything. No one's going to know that I prayed it. But one of the biggest powers of prayer is that prayer changes us. Dave Ferguson in the book Blessed says this: I cannot change the world. So there you go. You're off the hook. You can't change the world. You cannot change the world. Even prayer alone doesn't change the world. Only God can change the world. However, God uses prayer to change us. And then God uses us to change the world. However, God uses prayer to change us and then uses us to change the world. Prayer will bring to attention, bring to attention what needs your attention. Just ignore the extra two there. Prayer will bring attention to what needs your attention. As you make it a practice to regularly pray for people, God will use that to bring to your attention action that you can take to encourage, to equip, to spur on, to build up, to challenge, to correct, to make those relationships stronger relationships. It's not a starting point flippantly. It's not something that you just do to get rid of. And I know how easy it is to get into this rut of, I better pray, so I get my prayer out the way, and then I do the thing that I do. And we have to really work against that, because the purpose is not to get it done. The purpose is to let that prayer bring to your attention the things that need your attention. And to not race through it, to not have to get through maybe a list of 70. Maybe you have a list of lots, but you just give yourself permission to go down. And this is one of the practices that I have. I'll just go through the list until a name jumps out. I won't necessarily pray for everyone. I'll go through and I'll ask the Spirit to reveal to me who is the person that needs prayer today. You'll have it on your seat. This is a little activity that you can take home with you. You might find this sheet of paper is all you need, or you might find that it helps you with the principle. It's called a prayer map. It's just a tool that you can have that can help focus your attentions in your prayer world if you haven't necessarily got a system in place for this. In this method, yes, you are in the middle. That doesn't mean that you're the most important. It's just the model that I was given that I've replicated with. Maybe it does mean that I'm in the middle, but that's not the point. And so what happens is you fill it out, and there's no right and wrong way. So you do what works for you. So some people will use the connecting links to have people and then people that are connected to that person. I'll give you an example in a moment. Some people do what I do and have categories, and then off those categories they'll have people. So what I've got, this is my little prayer map. You probably can't see it, but I can from here and I can tell you them. So there's me. On the right-hand side is a bracket for family. Connected to family is I've got my close family. I pray regularly for Kelsey, and I pray regularly for Toby. But I also have a bracket for extended family. I've got the Jones family, which is Kelsey's side of the family, and I've got the Middleton family, which is my side of the family. Below me is the Ravo committee. So I've recently joined the local community group that looks after Ravenswood. And there are a number of people on that team, but I've decided that there are three in particular that I want to be regularly praying for. Ian, Roger, and Bell. On the other side of me, I've got my sports. I love volleyball. I'm connected. It's an intentional community connection that I have. I both play and I coach. On the team that I play on, I pray for Dave and Sarah. That's two of the players. Do I pray for the others? Yeah, I do, but not all the time. I felt God give me those names, and so they're names that I'm regularly praying for. On the coaching side of things, there's Charlie and Jess. Charlie oversees the whole league. Jess is she runs the juniors coaching that I'm a part of. So I pray for them. Then on the top, I've got church. On the far left, I've got the board. In the middle, I've got my team leaders, those who look after the ministries. And on the far right, I've got pastoral care. I have a list of people that I pray for at different times. Different people come onto that list. So there's a mix for me of categories and names that tell me something. But the purpose of it is that I can just look at this sheet of paper. I can use it. I can have it on my, I haven't got it on my bedside table, but I'm actually thinking of doing that and printing it out. Have it on my phone. Have it up on the wall. Have it somewhere that's appropriate for me. And I'll see it, and it will remind me to pray for these people.